So the last of us that we did was Chainsaw, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Short little Chainsaw. Wee little episode. Wee little show. I'm so glad we're past Chainsaw.
Me too.
People responded very strangely to it, though. They had very negative reactions to the fact that we did not care for the movie, or that we decided never to watch it again in our lives. People got very like defensive about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They're like, oh, I watch it at least once a year. I'm like, that's fine. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm just saying that I don't think I need to ever watch it again.
I'm going to put this as bluntly as I can. I do not like the movie.
Yeah.
You can hate me as much as you want.
I don't think anybody hates you. I'm just saying that it was a controversial stance.
You know what else was a controversial stance?
The Buffalo stance, which we always hang in.
No, I was going to say our Frankenstein stance.
Frankenstein. What's our Frankenstein stance?
That we don't think that...
Oh, yeah. Turns out the monster is...
A monster.
And also our controversial Fantasia stance.
Yeah.
Which is that it is not a very watchable movie.
No.
Every time I say that to a person, I get the weirdest look. Sorry. Sorry, folks. That movie is way too long.
It's garbage.
Okay, I'm not going that controversial. No, but no, speaking of long movies that probably aren't garbage, this episode we're covering a movie that I've never seen, and I know you've never seen.
What if I have? What if I just came out and was like, yeah, actually, I've seen this movie like 6 times.
What's the name of it?
No idea.
Barry Lyndon, 1975's Barry Lyndon. This is our, what, fourth, fifth Kubrick at this point?
We watched the one about God. Six, seven.
We're off to a rocky start.
What was it called?
We watched Paths of Glory.
Paths of Glory.
Not about God.
No, I got that confused. Seventh Seal. Seventh Seal.
We watched Paths of Glory. We watched Spartacus.
Spartacus.
We watched Doctor Strangelove. We watched 2001. We skipped Clockwork Orange and Lolita.
That's not on the list. We didn't
I know,
skip
but we
it.
Did skip them in his filmography. So I'm saying if people keeping track at home, they're not going to be like, well, what about The Seafarers? What about Flying Padre? What about Fear and Desire? No, no one's wondering that. What about Killer's Kit? Nope. You start kind of your Kubrick main body of work, minor body of work. Maybe The Killing comes first, but definitely Paths of Glory. But so we skipped Lolita. Mm-hmm. It's not on our list. And we skipped Clockwork Orange.
Which I would have skipped anyways.
I was just going to say that, which you hate it so much. You've seen the movie.
I've seen clips of the movie.
Yeah. You just have no interest
in
Clockwork Orange.
And I've tried to read the book.
It's a rough film.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think he deserved to get death threats over it. Because, you know, that's a bit harsh. I just don't like it.
And so now we are flying now. So he did 2001, but
wait, how many movies was that?
Oh, it was we watched 1, 2, 3, 4 movies so far. This is our fifth. It's not our last. But so he did before he even started doing 2001. He started working on a movie about Napoleon, and he wanted to do this big movie about Napoleon. Don't know why. I think he just was. I guess Napoleon's interesting.
He wasn't actually that short.
He wasn't. He was an average height for his time.
Wasn't it like British propaganda?
Yes.
Yeah.
Most everything we know about anyone is some form of propaganda.
Specifically British propaganda.
I was having to explain that to Mitzi just last night because I've been reading Shakespeare plays out loud to her.
Mm-hmm.
And we did Hamlet. We did Macbeth. We did Romeo and Juliet.
How did she react to Romeo and Juliet?
She loved it. She was because she had no idea what was coming.
Yeah, I know. I talked to her about it on the phone, and I was like, "What do you think's gonna happen?"
Yeah, she had no no idea like what was gonna happen at the end. She was like, "What?" Romeo and Juliet. We read Much Ado About Nothing. We read The Tempest, and now we're on Henry V.
I read Much Ado About Nothing,
and I love Much Ado About Nothing. It's my favorite comedy. And we're reading Henry V, and I had to explain that I was just like, this is not really what happened. This is propaganda that he wrote for the benefit of the crown. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's entertainment, but this is not
history.
And even the prologue comes out and he's like, we had to condense a bunch of stuff. This is just a play. So enjoy it, I hope. And I don't know why I brought that up, except that Kubrick was going to do a movie about Napoleon.
I brought up the fact that he wasn't as short.
Oh, right.
And that it was British propaganda.
Everything's propaganda. If you're telling a story, it's some form of propaganda.
Only the victors ever get to write history.
Yeah.
And that's propaganda.
Only guys named Victor.
Yep.
But I mean, even if you are not a victor, even if you are one of the people who are oppressed by a barbaric system and you're writing it, I wouldn't say it's propaganda, but you definitely have a point of view, a political mm-hmm. point of view. So In any case, he didn't get to make his Napoleon film because another Napoleon film came out and the studio pulled their funding. They were like, we don't need two Napoleon films floating around.
Who had an why did two people have the same idea?
So many Napoleon films.
Why did two people, why were two people like, you know what I think would be a great movie? Napoleon movie.
It wasn't just that it wasn't just that another movie came out. It was the movie Waterloo, which was produced by Dino De Laurentiis, came out and it bombed. Mm. It was a huge bomb. So people were like, nobody wants to see Napoleon films, which I always love studios who are just like, they'll pick like the one thing that may not actually be the cause of a movie's failure. Could be that Dino De Laurentiis produced it and it was garbage because he had about a half and half track record. I don't know. I've never seen Waterloo, nor will I ever watch it.
Tell us your opinions about Waterloo in the comments below.
There's a reason it's called Waterloo, because it was a failure, just like Waterloo. Like the actual Waterloo campaign was a failure. In any case, so he decided to, he had read the book that Barry Lyndon is based on, which was written by... yeah, you seem excited about this.
Bay? I was just making fun of you.
Which was written by William Makepeace Thackeray. Which you thought was a hilarious name. I'm like, it's Thackeray, but I think it's the word make peace. It's one of them descriptive names.
Will I am make peace Thackeray.
Will I? William Makepeace Thackeray. The novel The Luck of Barry Lyndon, which is I believe the novel is narrated by Barry Lyndon. He is an unreliable narrator. It's one of those kind of books.
It's a great Gatsby.
But he loved the book so much, he decided to make this movie. Based on it. I don't know how much it is actually based on it because I've never read The Luck of Barry Lyndon by William Makepeace Thackeray, and nor will I. I'm sorry, everyone. We're not going to do a special book club episode on, it may be the best novel in the world. I do not know.
I doubt it.
Don't come at me. Don't at me on Twitter.
At me on Twitter. You're like, as if you're going to find my Twitter.
All the Thackeray heads.
Can you imagine?
People who are passionate about something, they'll get up in arms.
Yeah, I know. I'm one of them.
But apparently this movie has been described as groundbreaking for its cinematography, for its cinematography. So
it could be a terrible movie. It could be a terrible movie. Filmed perfect.
I know it was a big hit at awards time. We'll get to that, though.
Okay, but what... How...
Awards
are garbage.
It won the MTV Movie Award for boringest film. I don't know. I don't know.
Awards are rigged.
Thanks.
They're garbage, and it's all political and based on who's there.
In any case, we'll get to awards. But
the Oscars.
This is our fifth Kubrick, mm-hmm. and I'm excited because it's a hole in my knowledge. And after this, we get to move into giallo films. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't want to jump ahead. We're talking about Barry Lyndon.
We kind of skipped one of the other movies.
We did. We skipped two of the other movies. No, you're talking about one of our movies. I was thinking about Lolita and The Clockwork Orange again. We have not touched on The Beehive.
Because we can't find it.
We will find it.
Send it to us.
Come heck or high water. If anyone out there has Spirit of the Beehive, please just send us a copy of it.
Yeah. Disinfected.
But Ollie, are you ready for Barry Lyndon?
It's 3 hours long.
A little bit over. Hey everyone, I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And
it's Del Toro time.
Woo! Oh my goodness, what are you doing?
Is that a rhetorical question?
I thought you were chewing something.
No, I just finished eating.
Oh, I see. So you got a little bit of food left in your mouth?
No, I just finished eating, I mean like 20 minutes ago.
not 20 seconds. I'm done eating. Sorry to our audience for chewing into the microphone. That's disgusting. Did I make you quiet?
No. I just didn't have anything to say.
Oh my gosh. So for those of you listening at home, this episode is late.
Oh, really?
It's late. It's so late because Thursday came around and I was like, hey, there's supposed to be an episode of our show. And there's not an episode of our show because I've lost track of the days. I have just completely lost track of what day it is now.
Yeah. So have I.
Time is meaningless. I don't know where I am. I don't know who I am. I don't know what life means anymore. I have no way to mark the days. I mean, which is funny because Thursday actually is like the one day I do have the ability to mark, because it's the one day I go into the office.
Granted, like, this week was not a good week to record anyways because of all the noise that was going on in the house that I'm in.
Oh, yeah. You had some kind of work done on the old house.
No.
The roof?
No.
Didn't you get the roof replaced?
No. We had solar panels put in, but that was months ago.
Oh, what was going on in the house?
My mom was doing her last week of training. She was training someone else over the phone.
So there was a lot of like pounding the walls?
Near the end, almost, yeah.
And for those of everyone listening at home, Ollie's mom does not train people in wall pounding. So it's...
No. Proofreading.
Yes. So even more stressful training period.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah.
Well, we watched Barry Lyndon.
We did.
We certainly did. And it was a rough go for a while.
It was a roller coaster of emotions.
You buried your head under the blankets and demanded I turn the movie off at one point.
I didn't demand you turn the movie off.
Okay, you were like, I'm going to turn it. No, you were like, I don't want to watch it anymore.
That's fair. I didn't say turn it off, though.
Turn it off. Turn it off. No, you were polite enough not to demand I turn it off, but you stuck through it to the very end, and later on you declared
it's not worth it.
No, you declared that it was a good movie.
Yeah, it was a great movie. The ending, not worth it.
Not worth it. I guess we'll get to the ending.
It's like the video game that I finished a month ago, which the ending was not worth it.
No spoilers for people who haven't finished the video game.
The video game, the only one.
The video game.
I can't even remember what it's called now.
Five Nights at Freddy's.
Nope.
Turns out at the end, the monsters don't get you.
I never finished that game.
This is my second podcast episode where Five Nights at Freddy's has been brought up this week. So
you brought it up.
I'm two for two.
It wasn't brought up. You chose to...
I did not bring it up on my other show, so that's points for me. So we finished. We watched it all in one sitting, intermission and all. Mm-hmm. And I will say that this movie is about... The first half is... Man gets everything he wants. The second half is man loses everything he had in the worst way.
Yeah.
It also has the saddest funeral scene I've ever seen in a motion picture.
I actually cried when we were watching that.
It was the most... Started off by laughing because I thought it was going to be absurd. And it was absurd, but it was so sad in its absurdity that I actually got all choked up.
Yeah.
Yes. And not an easy thing to do in a Kubrick film. Not too many Kubrick films that bring tears to the eyes, except maybe in some of his movies, tears of laughter, but not in this one.
No.
Not a whole lot of laughs in this movie.
Not in the second part, at least.
Yeah, I guess the first part you get some like pretty good chuckles because he's such a POS, mm-hmm. and like kind of you get to watch this guy kind of just like sort of weasel his way through life.
Yeah.
But in a not even an affable way. He's just Ryan O'Neal playing Barry Lyndon, or not even Barry Lyndon at that point. But Ryan O'Neal in the lead is so like almost blank.
We thought he was a robot for a while.
Right. We had a working theory that this was actually a robot man. Because he was just emotionless, like just completely unreadable.
Which is good. I liked that about the character.
Yeah, because then in the second half, when he becomes emotional, it's very jarring.
Mm-hmm.
His rage. You just realize how much rage this guy has pent up inside him through his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, he unleashes it on the wrong people.
Yep.
So Barry Lyndon, Ollie, I gave the quickest of quick overviews. What is this movie about?
It's about a young man who goes from rags to riches to rags again.
it is a real rags to riches to rags story.
Yeah.
Irish guy, a similar beginning to the Three Musketeers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was like if the Three Musketeers was... a dark comedy or not, or dark drama.
Yeah. If it was, if the Three Musketeers was darker, remembering that the Three Musketeers did end with the female lead just being murdered and then the female villain being like unceremoniously executed.
Yeah, but it was done in such a way.
It, right.
That it wasn't like, if I had Three Musketeers wasn't a comedy and was instead like a drama.
If I had to describe the Three Musketeers, I would simply say it was done in such a way.
Everyone died.
So this movie has a lot of themes running through it. One of the biggest ones is the duel. Mm-hmm. We get to see several duels done several different ways over several decades.
Yeah.
And the final duel in this movie is one of the tensest scenes I've ever seen in my life.
Honestly, though, we get to see a lot of terrible, like, was this the 1700s or the
1800s? Yes, 1750s through like the 17 like 80s or 70s. Yeah. Yeah,
we get to see a lot of terrible late 1700s fashion trends.
But also we get to see the only like positive representation of a gay relationship.
Very true.
That we've really seen so far in our film watching. Two officers bathing together in a river. Exchanging words of love to each other, unbeknownst to them, they are being overheard. But nothing bad happens to them.
No, they just get to live. I'm going to assume that they live and grow old together. That's my assumption.
Yeah. So it's this young guy named Redmond Barry, mm-hmm. who is just this sort of like clueless bumpkin.
Yeah.
Who becomes infatuated, falls in love with his cousin, Nora, mm-hmm. And then embarrasses himself by getting in a duel with a British captain who is also after her. Mm-hmm. And he gets into a duel with the British captain. He thinks he kills the British. He thinks he's killed the British captain. So he flees the town. You find out later that he didn't kill the British captain.
Yeah, because the family was like, no.
Yeah.
This guy's going to give us 3,000 stuff a year?
Yeah. Yeah, so like his cousin Nora, her family wanted her to marry this captain who, cuz he was rich and he was going to like support the father, and so they needed a way to get Redmond Barry out of the way, so they convinced him that he killed a guy in a duel.
Yeah.
You don't find that out till later, like after he has been literally through like towards tortures of war. Mhm. Because then he's like robbed on the street
by the best bandit, the only actual bandit, the only actual outlaw we get to see in this.
Captain Feeney.
Yeah.
Who is a highwayman. Mm-hmm. And it was a real person. James Frenny was a real Irish highwayman who operated in the 18th century. Mm-hmm. And wrote a book about his life.
Nice.
And so Thackeray wrote him into the novel The Luck of Barry Lyndon. And I will say that I read a little bit of The Luck of Barry Lyndon, not too much, because it is a Thackeray novel and I do not have the attention span to read a book right now. But it has a very different feel because mm-hmm. it's narrated by Barry Lyndon,
the unreliable narrator.
It's a very unreliable narrator, but also like, it's a little bit like there's the movie of Forrest Gump and there's the book of Forrest Gump, and they have, and since Forrest Gump narrates his own story in the book, you're like, this is a weird, like it's really off-putting, and the main character is very like, in this movie, Kubrick kind of leads you to cheer on Barry Lyndon for a while until you're not. Mm-hmm. But the feeling I got from the book was very much that like, you're at a remove from this guy just because he is so weird the whole time. But in any case, Kubrick is doing something very different than the book, and one of the things he's doing is making the most beautiful images I've ever seen in a major motion picture.
Honestly, though, it's really well done.
Yeah, if you get a chance to see this, like just in high def, like on a big like TV, like it's there were moments when I could have sworn I was looking at a painting.
I'm pretty sure I've seen some of the paintings that the shots were supposed to be.
Yeah, so he based a lot of the cinematography off the works of William Hogarth, who was an mm-hmm. 18th century painter, who was known for like The Harlot's Progress, The Rake's Progress, and his paintings told stories. Like it'd be a series of paintings mm-hmm. that would tell a story about about kind of a disreputable person succeeding in life and then losing everything. Like that was Hogarth. But he didn't only use that. He used 18th century painting for like the overall feel. He used, I think, 17th century paintings to get the lighting, and then 19th century for the romanticism.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great documentary, like a 20 minute doc on the Blu-ray about just the painting. And they have like an art historian showing you how it worked. And it's just brilliant. Like, mm-hmm. how he managed to put all this together. And I actually posted about it on social media. This is everyone's favorite movie, apparently. Like, if you mention Barry Lyndon, everyone's just like, oh yeah, the best Kubrick. Oh, the best Kubrick.
Even though no one talks about it.
Unless you bring it up. But Kubrick, of course, being Kubrick, insisted on only natural lighting in many of the scenes, like the interior scenes. Interior scenes in these beautiful palaces that were real palaces because he wanted to shoot in real places. So they were renting these places. And then they had to create these special candles because he insisted on things only being lit with candles. So it was these special three-wick candles that really were bright. They had to use like cameras and lenses that were only designed for like deep space photography in order to capture like the light. And they had to do all this in these palaces that they had rented that they were not allowed to damage in any way.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, so the candles would start melting. They'd have to make sure no wax got anywhere, but they had to change the candles in between every take. But there were like 30 to 40 takes per scene because everything had to be perfect. His cinematographer, John Alcott, pretty much had a nervous breakdown during filming and had to leave. Because it was the most difficult thing. When Kubrick told him how he wanted to film this, he was like, "Yep, sorry, mate, not gonna do that." And he had to like be offered like three times the pay in order to come to, because he's like, "This is going to be the most difficult film shoot in history because of what you want," and it was. But I'd say it paid off. It looks great.
Yeah, it looks amazing. I do say whoever the costume designer was is spectacular.
Oh,
specifically
yeah.
For the women.
Uh huh.
I love it.
Well, the costumes are, and the costumes are specific to the characters, like the style mm-hmm. they go. One thing that the art historian pointed out was that paintings were always commissioned by the rich.
Mm-hmm.
So the paintings always showed people wearing their best or sometimes mm-hmm. rented clothes. So we don't actually get a good look at what people actually wore in their day to day. So we're seeing this sort of heightened reality that he's done a really good, like that Kubrick did a really good job of presenting on screen. But it was nominated actually for and won Best Costume Design at the Academy mm-hmm. Awards. Won 4 Oscars: score, costume design, art direction, and cinematography. I mean, there you go. And in fact, it may have been the art. Was it the art director or the cinematographer who quit halfway through? I can't remember. But it was, yeah, I just can't. Milena Cananero and Ulla Britt Soderlund won for costume design. Mm-hmm. And you are correct. Like, it's astounding just how well costumed this movie is.
Yes.
Yes. You are correct in your opinion. I'm sorry, I did not mean that to sound as patronizing as it came out.
No, I just think all the women were very beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of beautiful women, and of course he did cast like incredibly beautiful women in all the roles. Marissa Berenson, who played Lady Lyndon,
mm-hmm.
He based all of her costumes on... I can't remember the artist, a very specific artist who painted a very specific woman
mm-hmm.
who was an actress. So they were like, so he based her look off an artist's painting of an actress who portrayed women of her state, but wasn't actually a woman of that like refined a place in society. So it's that Kubrickian like, several degrees removed from reality in order to create this ultimate reality that I just think is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, she didn't look like the other like women in the movie.
No, of course not.
She was really good though. I really liked her.
Yeah. So Ryan O'Neal plays Barry, by the way, and he's great. He's gone off. He gets run out of town. Basically, he joins the army. He fights in the Seven Years' War.
Mm-hmm.
But he's constantly looking for a way to escape, and that's when he overhears the officers who are exchanging love to each other, and he steals one of their horses because the guy has like a message he has to deliver, and so he pretends to be this officer, and he along the way he's like sleeping with women, and he ends up running into a Prussian officer who figures out that Barry Lyndon has gone AWOL, but instead of arresting him and sending him to prison or executing him, whatever, he simply like conscripts him into the Prussian army,
which is worse than the other army.
What does the Prussian army do?
Bad.
To what parts of your body?
All.
Yeah, you got to get like whipped.
Yeah.
I don't know who that guy was they were whipping, but he wasn't happy about it.
Isn't it Barry Lyndon?
No, Barry Lyndon was leading him down the... He was the guy in front. The guy getting whipped had like a mustache.
I honestly just thought it was Barry.
Yeah, you see this guy getting running a gauntlet where people like whipping him on the back. Like the Prussian army is apparently no fun. But he ends up saving the life of the captain who turned him in the first place. And so the Frederick the Great gives him a special commendation. And Barry ends up going undercover for the Prussians.
Yeah, undercover. He's a double agent. Let's just be honest here.
Because the guy he's spying on, this Chevalier, is Irish.
Yeah.
And I guess in the novel, he was actually Barry Lyndon's uncle. Which I guess Kubrick was like, that's a little bit too much of a coincidence.
Yeah.
So he reveals himself as a spy to the Chevalier. So he ends up, like you said, like he becomes a double agent, and but he's not really spying for the Chevalier.
No,
he's just,
and he's not necessarily lying either. He's telling as much truth as is allowed in order to keep the Chevalier safe.
Right, because the Prussians think the Chevalier is a spy.
Yeah,
but he's not. He's just a gambler.
Yeah.
So there's really nothing to report.
Yeah, the only time that he does like. I guess he doesn't even really lie then, when he tells them where the guy's going to be so they can send him away.
Right. So, yeah, so the Chevalier is like a professional cheater at cards, and Barry helps him. And he gets called out by a prince.
Yeah.
Because like he plays like on all these, like he plays against all these famous people, and they make the point of saying that like these rich guys don't really pay for money. They pay for clout. They play for clout. So they never really like pay back their debts, but the Chevalier always insists on having his debts paid. And so he kind of gets in trouble. The Prussians are going to kick the Chevalier. What are they going to do? Like kick him out of the country?
Yeah.
And so how do they twist that?
They have Barry dress up as him.
Yes. And he gets driven to like out of Prussia. They think he's the Chevalier, and the Chevalier has like escaped himself in the middle of the night. And then they just like kind of like kick it around Europe.
Yeah. And that's kind of where part one ends.
Well, part one ends with him meeting
the Lady Lyndon.
Yes.
And her gross husband.
So wait. Talk about this amazing husband.
He's the worst.
Who's probably the only good guy in the whole movie.
Is he?
I mean, he's... is he gross? How gross is he?
Very.
But why?
Well, I mean, I guess I'm mostly basing my opinion off of him, off of the time that he was really drunk.
Yeah.
And accused his wife of messing around.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. He just kind of creeps me out.
He does mess. She is messing around.
But again, it just, he seems like not a great guy.
So Barry Lyndon seduces this countess whose husband is extremely ill.
Yeah.
He's in this awesome like wheelchair though.
Mm-hmm.
With has like a steering wheel.
Yeah.
And they've got a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
And Barry Lyndon makes the guy so angry that he dies.
Yep.
Which doesn't happen in the novel. In the novel, it's a little more like, a little more straight, like less fantastical. But yeah, Barry Lyndon like goads him until he just like has a heart attack and dies.
Mm-hmm.
And then he marries his wife. And that is when actually Barry Lyndon becomes Barry Lyndon.
Yeah.
Because the whole first half is like how he becomes Barry Lyndon. Because until this point, he's Mr. Barry.
Yeah, I remember you kept saying, so how does he become Barry?
Yeah. Well, because I didn't know that like part one was going to be the more than half of the movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like they've divided this movie into chapters and like chapter one is how he becomes Barry Lyndon. Nope. Part one, book one, how he becomes Barry Lyndon. And that's like, and so this whole movie, we've been watching this guy like kind of just like fall through life as this like sort of like, he's smart, but you don't really see the machinations.
He's also really good at beating people up.
Yes. Oh, boy. The first time we get to see him, he fights someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the army. This guy, he like, this huge guy, big man. Mm-hmm. And he like thrashes him.
Yeah, because he's small.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, the guy was very large.
Yeah.
He's like a very large man. but if you've ever seen the movie Far and Away with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, which is about two Irish immigrants who come to America, Tom Cruise plays the husband.
Oh, and really? I thought he played the wife.
He's a very small man because Tom Cruise is only like 2.5 feet tall.
Yeah, we all know that.
But he's very, very muscular man. Muscular.
How tall is Tom Cruise?
He's like 5'5", 5'6". He's very small.
Well, if he's very small, then I must be tiny.
You are.
Yeah, you're right.
Tom Cruise is very small. He's like 5'8" or something. I don't know. He's very short, though.
He's 5'7".
Well, there you go. But he's also very muscular, and he fights in that movie like for money. And his fighting style is very much like Barry Lyndon's. He's small, so he gets around behind people, and then he punches you very hard in the kidneys.
Yeah.
Who
says you have to fight fair? No one.
No one. There's no rules in bare-knuckle fisticuffs, especially if you're fighting someone in the army just so the person doesn't kill you.
I never understood like the whole like fighting honorably thing.
Yeah, it's a fool's game.
Yeah, because like there's no honor in fighting.
If you ever read the Shinobi video game comic adaptation from the UK Sonic the comic book, a whole plot in that one is about how the Shinobi, the ninja, whose name I can't remember, has been taught by his master that there is no such thing as honorable fighting. It's all about winning. You just got to wait till the guy's back is turned and then kill him.
Yeah, because if the guy was in a fight for like all the stakes, I would use every single advantage I had.
Yeah, he's like, get in close, kill him as quickly as you can. If he turns his back, kill him, stab him in the back. So that's the first half of the movie. And we've watched Barry Lyndon like become Barry Lyndon. That could be the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting enough. You sort of follow this like roguish cad through his life. He's not a rogue in like the Han Solo sense.
No.
He's not like snarky or funny or charming, really.
He's not the kind of rogue that I play whenever I play a rogue.
Right. He is like the most like, he is blank rogue.
Mm-hmm.
Like the blank, like just like I am going to rogue my way through life. But I'm not going to do it so anyone finds it charming. Like, and God be with you if you get in my way.
Yeah.
So that's the end of the part one. And we were like, all right. But much like Into the Woods, act two is where it all falls apart. And much like act two of Into the Woods, it's about Barry Lyndon's marriage not being very happy.
Yep.
So Barry Lyndon, you quickly find out that he's not good with money.
Or women. Or kids. Anything.
Or little boys.
Who aren't his blood.
Yes, because they end up having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Brian. But they already had a little boy, Barry Lyndon's stepson, named Charles.
Yes.
I
liked Charles.
Yes, and Barry is mean to him.
Yeah.
He beats him with sticks.
Yep.
Much.
Mm-hmm.
For any reason.
Pretty much.
The years go by, and the little boy grows into a little man who they call Bullingdon. That Bullingdon, that's his name. Bullingdon.
Mm-hmm.
He grows into a man. The funny thing about this movie, though, is that, like, because it's filmed in, like, 8 months, but it takes place over many years, like, everyone just sort of stays one age. Barry Lyndon starts off as, like, a young man who looks like a 30-year-old man.
Yeah.
And he ends as an older man who looks like a 30-year-old man. Mm-hmm. Bullingdon goes from being 10 years old to being in his 20s.
Yep.
Pretty quick. But that sort of, like, helps the sort of, like, just constant, like, humiliation he suffers, because you're watching this, like, 20-year-old man get beaten by Ryan O'Neal.
Mm-hmm.
But
we get to see the best birthday party.
So tell us about the greatest birthday party.
There's a magician
who is, like, basically any birthday magician.
Yeah.
Like, you could have plucked this guy out of the 18th century and sent him to a birthday party today. His act hasn't changed.
No, it hasn't. I like to think that they just found just a street magician. We're like, we need you for a second. Come here.
You're right. Kubrick is going to make one impulse decision in his whole life. It is going to be casting this birthday clown in his Barry Lyndon movie.
Yes.
So also, Barry Lyndon's mother has moved in with them.
Yeah.
And she is like, look, you've married this countess, but you still have no station in life. If your wife dies, she's going to leave all of her money to her first son, and you and your new son aren't going to get anything because this guy hates you. Everyone kind of hates you. You have no title. You're not a lord. You're just a guy. You're just Mr. Lyndon. And you've got to do something about that to secure yourself in society. You've got to get a title.
Mm-hmm. Is the word I'm looking for conniving?
She is conniving. Yeah. But she's also, like, just looking out for her son, who she and her son.
Yeah, they come from a very poor station in life, and she's using everything in her power to make sure that her grandson grows up.
Yeah. Yeah, but she's also pretty conniving.
She's also awful, and I hate her.
Yeah, she's kind of terrible. So he starts trying to become a lord. And how do you become a lord back in the day?
Back in the day, you gotta either be born a lord, uh-huh, or have the king or queen bestow the title upon you.
Right.
Now, you can just buy the title.
Right. But you did all this research.
I did.
Yeah, you were like, how do you become a lord? But the way you get the title bestowed upon you is you just got to schmooze.
Yeah, pretty much.
Constant schmoozing, which he does. And he spends a lot of money that he doesn't have.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Bullingdon hates him.
I would hate him too.
Yeah. Because he's spending all the family's money. He humiliates Bullingdon. And the little boy.
Bullingdon is also very much, they describe him as a mother's boy.
He very much is.
And he respects his mother a lot and wants her to be treated well and happy. And Barry is a jerk.
Right. Oh, and Barry is also, like, totally sleeping around in front of his wife.
Yeah.
In fact, there is one scene of nudity because it's PG, but mm-hmm, it's the 70s. And everyone knows that he is. Everyone knows he's terrible. Lady Lyndon is just falling further and further into despair. She's got this priest who lives with her now.
He lived with her before.
Oh, okay. But he's like, his name is Reverend Runt, which is awesome.
I love him.
Yeah, you think he's got, he looks like a rat.
He looks like Kylo Ren.
He does.
That's the first thing I said when I saw him.
So for a while, I thought this guy was going to be bad news, but he ends up just being another victim of Barry Lyndon's, like, obnoxiousness.
Like Kylo Ren?
Wait a minute. Kylo Ren did kill a lot of people.
Have you seen the new movie yet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
kills a lot of people.
Yeah. A lot of people kill a lot of people in those movies.
That's true. Remember how like they established that like stormtroopers are actually just like normal people who were kidnapped as children, and that they all have like they all have the ability to like maybe break away, and then you think they're going to do something with that, but they don't, and instead they just keep killing a lot of these stormtroopers.
Yeah. Remember when Star Wars wasn't such a wreck?
I do, because I was born in the 1970s.
Exactly.
In any case, there's still the Clone Wars and Rebels and that Resistance.
Mandalorian.
Those are all great. All the TV stuff. Yeah. Just great. Man, Rebels is good.
I'm still playing the video game.
Yeah. Hours of entertainment. Mm-hmm. So Bullingdon is getting ticked off more and more and more and more and more and more. And finally, he, in the middle of the worst concert in the world.
Yeah.
He strides in with his little brother, with mm-hmm. Brian, wearing his shoes, which is very cute.
Yes.
And he basically tells off Barry Lyndon and says, in fact, I'm leaving this house. I'm leaving this family. I'm done until you're gone. I'm done with you.
Mm-hmm.
How does Barry Lyndon react?
Like a child.
Because he jumps on him.
Yeah, and then tries to beat him to death.
He tries to beat him to death in front of the guests. And everyone's like, I don't want to be friends with you anymore. and he loses all of his wealthy friends and any possible chance of getting a title.
Mm-hmm.
And Bullingdon leaves.
Yep.
And his wife falls further and further into despair. Reverend Runt, she just basically prays with Reverend Runt a lot. And then comes the most glorious birthday party.
The best party.
It's not the party. It's just the birthday present. No, is this the party? Is this where the party comes in?
Which one?
With the little horses. The lambs that pull.
That was with the magician. That was okay. Before.
That was with the magician.
And that was before this, because Bear, the older brother was still around.
Right. So this is his next birthday party.
Yeah.
And all that little Brian wants.
Brian?
All Brian horse. Wants is a beautiful horse like his daddy.
Yeah. Oh, and we there's a brief like montage of father-son moments between the two of them.
Right. And we see that Barry Lyndon's actually a really good dad to mm-hmm. little Brian.
Yeah.
Now, to set this up, at his previous birthday party, Brian was being pulled in a little carriage, mm-hmm. a beautiful little kid-size like carriage that's being pulled by lambs.
I think they're just sheep.
Sheep. Being pulled by sheep. It is the cutest thing in the world.
In costumes.
Yes, the sheep are wearing costumes. This little boy is so happy in his golden carriage being mm-hmm. pulled by these sheeps. That's just a setup. Just yes. Keep that in your mind. Beautiful carriage for a little boy being pulled by sheeps in costumes.
Mm-hmm.
All Brian wants is a beautiful horse like his daddy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his daddy can't afford a horse, but he buys him one anyway.
Yeah.
But what does he tell Brian?
You can't ride this horse without me.
Right, because it's a big horse and you're a little boy. You're only 9.
Mm-hmm.
And it's dangerous to go riding a horse without your daddy around, so don't ride a horse without daddy, okay?
Okay.
Well, no, I didn't know we were playing roles. So the next morning, Barry Lyndon wakes up, yawns and stretches, and he's gonna go find his boy, show him the horsey.
Mm-hmm.
But where's the boy?
Not there.
So Barry Lyndon goes looking everywhere for the boy. And then he hears that the boy was heading towards the stables.
Mm-hmm.
So Barry Lyndon goes heading off towards the stables. And who should he meet along the way?
The Reverend?
Like just a bunch of people.
Yeah. With the stretcher.
And what's on the stretcher?
The dying little boy.
The 9-year-old boy. Because the boy went out. He was so excited. He got on the horse and rode the horse without his father. And the horse threw him. And we get to see the flashback to the horse throwing him.
And then falling on top of him.
Horse falls on top of him. Little boy is paralyzed. And then he dies in bed.
Mm-hmm.
In the saddest deathbed scene I've ever seen.
Yeah, holding his father and mother's hands.
Telling them to be happy with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Asking his father if he won't go to heaven because he disobeyed. And his father reassuring him that he will go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
It is the saddest thing. And then the funeral of the little boy. And you see his little coffin being pulled in a cart. And in my mind, I was like, it'd be hilarious.
Wait, no, it wasn't in the cart. It was in his little...
But it starts in so close, you can't really see what in. And it starts pulling out, and you see it's the carriage he wrote on his birthday. And I was like, I said to myself, I don't remember if I said it to myself or out loud, but I was like, it will be hilarious if it's being pulled by the sheeps. It would be hilarious if it was the same carriage being pulled by the same sheep.
And hilarious.
And then the camera pulls out, and what is it?
It's the carriage being pulled by the sheeps in costumes.
Is it so funny?
No.
What is it?
It's sad.
It is the saddest thing we've ever seen on screen.
Yeah.
It's the saddest moment in film history, and we both start crying for this little boy who died, who just wanted his family to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lambs, I guess maybe the lambs buried him. I don't know what happens after that. I want to believe he gets taken to the graveyard and there's like a lamb grave digger.
Sheep. They're not lambs.
I just want the sheep. I just want it to be like Shaun the sheep. And they're all somewhat intelligent sheep. I want his death to at least have some kind of like whimsy or good feelings about it.
I want to think that he got driven to heaven's gate by the sheep.
Yes.
Angel sheep.
That's probably what happened.
It's the saddest scene in the entire movie.
It's so sad. Well, then things don't get more cheerful.
No.
Because Barry becomes an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
Lady Lyndon becomes mute and refuses to speak and spends all of her days praying in the church.
Yeah.
And then Barry Lyndon's mom kicks the Reverend out.
Yeah, who has been Lady Lyndon's only source of comfort.
Right. Which causes her to try to kill herself.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't work.
No.
It just makes her incredibly sick. And we get to watch her convulse and thrash around and scream for a while.
Yeah.
And that happened, though. And I said, oh, my God, this is like Clockwork Orange all of a sudden. Well, because the way the camera suddenly started moving. Like, mm-hmm. Until that point, the camera had been very smooth. And this was all of a sudden extreme handheld jerkety mm-hmm. camera. And I was like, ah, but it was very Kubrickian. And suddenly it did not look like a painting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looked like something out of like a Clockwork Orange or like The Shining. Like it was mm-hmm. just like incredibly intense. So
this is where my disdain for Barry and his mother comes in.
Yeah.
I mean, I already didn't like Barry, but I was, like, okay with his mom.
Yeah.
But when she purposefully starts isolating Lady Lyndon just to get her signature.
That's, yes.
That's when I'm like, I'm drawing the line here. The line right. here has been drawn.
Because she says they need to send the Reverend away because they can't afford him.
Yeah. And then he's like, I don't care. I want to be with Lady Lyndon so I can help her. You do not have to pay me. And yeah. then she goes, well, actually, you're the one causing all of the Lady Lyndon's problems.
So get out.
And he's like, no. No. That's some absolute garbage right there.
Right. So Reverend Runt and the accountant, who's been there the whole time, his name is Graham.
Mm-hmm.
They go and they find the son, Bullingdon.
Yeah.
And Bullingdon comes marching back and he challenges Barry Lyndon to a...
duel.
Another duel. Oh, and we didn't, I don't even think we mentioned that the first thing you see in this movie is Barry Lyndon's father getting killed in a duel.
Yes.
So this is like one of several duels. We've also saw Barry Lyndon fighting a sword duel
mm-hmm.
earlier on to get payment back for the one of the gambling guy's debts. So like there's in all these duels. The duel is incredibly stressful.
It's the worst thing ever.
Bullingdon vomits.
I don't think I watched most of the build up to the duel.
It is very slow, very tense. Bullingdon throws up. Barry doesn't want to shoot Bullingdon, so he fires into the ground.
He fires into the ground. Hamilton shot into the air.
Right. Bullingdon still wants the... Well, first, Bullingdon's pistol misfires, but that counts as him shooting. So then Barry gets to shoot, but he shoots into the ground, and they're like, is this good enough? Are you done? And Bullingdon's like, no, I want to shoot him. So he shoots Barry Lyndon in the leg. Barry Lyndon has to get his leg amputated.
Yeah.
And then Bowling uses that opportunity, like Bowling then uses that as an opportunity to seize control of his mother's house again. And
make sure his mother's okay.
And they basically send Barry and his mom off. They pay him. They're like, mm-hmm. we'll support you for the rest of your lives. Mm-hmm. But you have to leave England.
Mm-hmm.
And so Barry Lyndon's like, fine. And he leaves with his one leg and his mom. They go back to Ireland. And then they leave Ireland and...
to go to America.
And that's the last anyone ever hears of them.
We do get to see Lady Lyndon, though, doing much better.
Yes.
And signing some checks.
Signing checks over to Barry Lyndon. His $500 payment.
Mm-hmm.
And, or guineas, I guess. And, yeah, she looks better. It doesn't seem like it's still a very happy house. But happier than before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the movie.
Yeah.
And it says at the end, it was in the reign of George III that the aforesaid personages lived and quarreled. Good or bad, handsome or ugly, rich or poor, they are all equal now. And that's what we're left. That's where we're left.
Yeah.
This sort of like, sort of shell-shocked at the end of it. Just like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
This was the most like gutting but beautiful movie I'd seen in a while.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, Leon Vitali, who played Bullingdon mm-hmm. in this movie, very good performance.
Mm-hmm.
Leon Vitali had such an experience making this movie, like such a wow experience playing this movie, making this movie, that he became really good friends with Stanley Kubrick. And he was like, I know I'm done filming, but can I just be your assistant? You don't have to pay me. And so Kubrick was like, all right. Leon Vitali ended up becoming Kubrick's professional assistant for the rest of Kubrick's life.
Damn.
He also appeared in a few other movies. But he was there at Kubrick's side for almost every moment of Kubrick's filmmaking after this. And then when Kubrick died, Vitali has been responsible for preserving Kubrick's work and making sure that his films are always shown the way Kubrick intended them to be shown
mm-hmm.
and that his films are like sort of like kept in the proper position in the public eye. He just is basically like Kubrick's guy.
Mm-hmm.
And his work is considered so fascinating, like this relationship that he had with Kubrick, that they actually, in 2017, a documentary was made about him, about Leon Vitali, called Film Worker, which is just about Vitali's work with Kubrick,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is... just it's like this sort of fascinating thing that came out of being in Barry Lyndon.
Yeah.
And also, he did a great job in Barry Lyndon.
Yeah, he did.
He got to get punched in the kidneys by Ryan O'Neal.
I don't know if he got punched.
Well, not in real life.
No, I mean in the movie. I don't think he ever got punched.
Oh, really? I thought I remember Ryan O'Neal hitting him in the back, in the kidney, when he jumped on him.
Oh, maybe,
like,
yeah.
That's how he got him down. Like, he started screaming and he fell to the ground. But yeah, a movie about very unpleasant people.
Yeah.
But what I love about this movie is that... so we didn't do, of course, we didn't do Clockwork Orange. But Clockwork Orange was considered, like, the height of Kubrick's career at the time it came out. And then Barry Lyndon came out and people were just kind of like, eh, it's really long. Kind of boring. I don't know. Some critics were like, this is an amazingly cool movie, but most viewers were like, I don't know, man. And they just kind of forgot about it. And Kubrick was disappointed. And so he took on The Shining because he knew that would be like, at least like financially successful.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, in later years, people were like, oh, wait, this is actually a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And many filmmakers say it's like one of their favorite films of all time. I think did we already talk about Del Toro's opinion on this?
I can't remember.
But I was fascinated to watch you watch it.
Why?
Because you went back and forth from absolutely not wanting to watch it to declaring it a pretty good movie.
Yeah. That's how I feel about it.
Pretty good movie?
Yep.
As far as the Kubricks we've watched...
I don't remember which Kubricks we've watched. We watched Spartacus, Paths of Glory,
mm-hmm.
and one other one.
2001.
2001.
Is that it?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, no. Yes. Yes.
I think this has been my favorite one.
This was your favorite one?
Yeah.
So far?
Yes.
Is there a reason for that, or just because...
Well, Paths of Glory was really dark and depressing.
Yes.
Spartacus was very long.
Is it as long as this? Longer than this?
I don't know. We watched it in two sittings. And that's also, right. There weren't as many female characters in Spartacus as there were in this one.
That's very true.
2001 was just weird.
Oh, we watched Doctor Strangelove.
Oh, that's right. We already know my opinion on Doctor Strangelove. 2001 was just very weird.
Yeah.
So I think this has been my favorite one so far.
Nice. Yeah, I'm going to say that, like, I am a staunch 2001 advocate. I love 2001 wholeheartedly. I loved Paths of Glory. But I would say that I think this is my new favorite Kubrick.
Mm-hmm.
And I had several people say, like, this is my favorite Kubrick. And I was like, yeah, I can see that. There's a lot of emotion in this movie. Kubrick gets accused of being like pretty emotionally removed. Like, he makes movies that are about like sort of like emotionless people.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie really just sort of takes that and applies it to the main character, but then like all hell breaks loose in the second act.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated to watch it. I'm glad we watched it all in one sitting.
Me too. Even though I did not want to.
Yeah. So Guillermo del Toro obviously really likes this. He talks about it on Twitter. It mostly just comes up in like, just like when he talks about amazing movies, he brings it up. He brings it up sort of back and forth with Eyes Wide Shut a few times. But I mean, I think it's sumptuous. It's a triumph of artistic direction. It's a triumph of cinematography. I can see where it's about like just it's anti-war. It's about humanity falling into like their own like succumbing to their own flaws. I don't know. There's just I think it sort of like rings a lot of those Guillermo del Toro bells.
Mm-hmm. Has the angry father.
Yeah. he says, in my opinion, time has positioned Barry Lyndon as the masterpiece it always was. Years from now, Eyes Wide Shut will also be vindicated.
Let me rephrase that. It has the angry stepfather that we see in Pan's Labyrinth.
It does. It does. That's true. That's true. And there is a parallel between abusive parents and abusive systems of government,
mm-hmm.
and abusive systems of economic systems,
mm-hmm.
that Guillermo del Toro is really big on. Like, to del Toro, there doesn't seem to be a separation between like an abusive parent, an abusive leader, an abusive system.
Mm-hmm.
It's all connected. And I think that Barry Lyndon does a really nice job at showing like these abuses and these flaws are inherent, just like in masculinity, in the way the world treats its subordinates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he puts it on, he considers it a good double program with the Duelists. He had this whole thing on Twitter, a 13-part tweet about Scorsese's The Irishman,
mm-hmm.
and he compares it to Barry Lyndon a lot. He says they're both about lives that come and go, the turmoil involved in that, the drama, the violence, noise, and ultimately loss, and how all lives, for all their drama and violence and noise, it invariably just fade. Like, mm-hmm. everyone's life will eventually just be done. And in the very end of this movie, it says, like, we all end up in the same place. We're all just dust.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, in fact, I think I will, not soon, but I will eventually revisit this movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if you will.
I don't know. I like the costumes.
That's true. Yeah, I can see this being a movie you... Well, I don't know, because the music is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, do you remember in 2001 how, like, that was all, like, found music, like,
mm-hmm.
classical music? He did the same thing with this, but it's... I think it actually works better in this movie.
Yeah.
Wait, go ahead.
I think pairing it with the... like painting like idea
yeah
works really well.
Yeah, I think you can look at this movie like over and over again and always catch something new.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think if you just watch the backgrounds of this movie, you would be like, this is a whole different film. So yeah, he uses a lot of traditional music. The Chieftains play on the score, National Philharmonic Orchestra. It's a great score. There's a great, if you want to get the Blu-ray, it's totally worth picking up. There's so many extras on it, just these little documentaries about the music, about the costumes, cinematography, just the making of. It's God, just
my cat is ruining my life right now.
Cats don't like Barry Lyndon, and they love ruining lives. I think that's the lesson we all learned from this episode.
Yeah,
of It's Still Torah Time. Do you have anything else to say about Barry Lyndon?
Good movie. 100% would recommend for a sleepover.
For a high school sleepover?
I'm not in high school.
No, but when I think sleepover, I think of like kids. What I would suggest you do, if you're a parent listening to this, if your child, say between the ages of like, I don't know, 10 and 13, is having a sleepover, no matter their gender, no matter the gender of their friends, having a sleepover with like, say like 4 or 5 kids, and it's going to be a rowdy party. Like they're going to be slurping Big Red. They're going to be eating Red Vines. They're going to be, chewing Big Red gum. I don't know. I'm trying to think of more red. I don't know why red things, eating a bowl of cherries. if it's going to be this wild kids just staying up all night and they're like, mama, mama, or dada, rent us up some movies, which you don't do anymore. But if you did, I would say instead of letting them watch Sonic the Hedgehog, which they're going to want to do, instead of letting them watch up the latest, Hotel Transylvania, or watching episodes of Kipo on Netflix, which I highly recommend, instead be like, I've got a good sleepover movie for you.
Emotionally scar them with Barry Lyndon.
Whip out Barry Lyndon. Start playing it. And when they're like, this is boring, just be like, oh, just wait. They probably won't make it past the first 10 minutes, but if they make it through all 3+ hours of it, you could give them a cake. I don't know. I don't know where this is going, but I think it would be the kickingest party that any junior high school child has ever held.
I think this is a good movie to watch if you have a couple of friends over.
Yeah?
Yeah, especially if your friends are interested in film.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Or if your friends are people like me who are just super nerds.
So that's a good rec. That's 2 good recs from us.
Mm-hmm.
And Guillermo del Toro, who also likes it.
He doesn't count. He's not. What part of this podcast makes you think his opinion matters?
We haven't discussed him in years. We don't talk about that man. No, you definitely should watch Barry Lyndon. If it's the Kubrick you've always just kind of given a pass to because it seemed long or because it was like, costume drama. I don't really feel like watching it. Take it home, or I don't know. Go. We watched it on Amazon. Whip it up on Amazon.
We didn't want to watch it on Amazon.
But we ended up watching it on Amazon.
Why did we have to watch it on Amazon?
Because the world is a cruel place, and I can't ever get anything to work on my television.
Yep.
And because we tried to watch it, and the picture was like all like fuzzy and weird, and it didn't work. But our next movie, I am so excited about our next movie. What's our next movie?
I'll know.
I'll give you a hint. I gave a bunch of hints about it when I was talking about the slumber party. Red Vines, Big Red, Bullet Full of Cherries.
That means nothing to me.
Deep Red.
I would never have guessed that.
Next movie, 1975's Deep Red, or as we may be watching it, Profondo Rosso. I have seen this movie. I have seen this movie a couple of times. I have seen this movie several times. I adore this movie. B, I'm not sure which version we're going to watch, because you can watch it in English, you can watch it in Italian, both legitimate releases. There's also two very different cuts of this movie, so I'm going to have to pick it out. I have the Blu-ray, but it has both versions.
We should just watch both of them.
It's a lot of movie watching.
How about I watch one and you watch the other one?
Oh, that's an idea. That is an idea. It's Deep Red. It's available everywhere. You can actually get it on Shudder. You can get it on Amazon. But I have it on Blu-ray. So it's our first Giallo film.
Mm-hmm.
It's our first Argento film.
Well, if it's a Giallo film, we should definitely watch the Italian version.
But I believe the English version is longer. It has more stuff in it.
Okay, but longer doesn't always mean better.
But I do remember the English version is very good. And it has, like, it's Italian, so it has, like, English actors in it.
Well, then let's watch the longer one, then. We get more content. We can make our episode longer.
Or we just watch both of them. I don't know.
Yeah.
But in any case, yes, Deep Red, Profondo Rosso, which also has an incredible score. I'm looking forward to it. So,
nice.
So this was interesting. Barry Lyndon, Big Barry B, B Barry Lynn's.
Big Bear Lyndon. That would be his name in the bear country.
That's right. The Bears, the Berenstain Bears go to see Stanley Grizzlick's Barry
Lyndon.
It'd just be called Barry Lyndon.
Like, yeah.
But it'd be like B-E-A-R-Y, Barry Lyndon. Yeah. And the Cubs would be like, why'd you take us to see this movie? And Tuttle would be like, 3 hours long. That's too long, man. And they'd leave. But then the Cubs would stay and watch it. And in the end, brother and sister would be like, I'm glad we stayed and watched all of Barry Lyndon. That was a good movie.
Yeah.
I guess that'd be the plot of the book. The Berenstain Bears watch Barry Lyndon. What an amazing children's book that would be.
You hear that, Mike Berenstain? That's your next book written for you.
Just have the bears go to see long movies. Oh, Dances with Wolves, that was long, they will say at the end. Berenstain Bears, that's it. That's Lord of the Rings extended cut.
Talk about a crossover right here. Talk about a collab.
Then we'd have to read those books on this show. I don't know where I'm going with this. In any case, thank you so much for listening to us. Thank you so much for being fans of this show. Do we have anything else we need to say?
Binoculars.
I'm Phil.
And I'm Molly.
And we'll see you when
it's Del Toro time. Goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.